Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast that is more security than a PCI-compliant bank secure data center. This week, the virtual workbench has been transported to a secure location in a heavily protected basement in a San Jose campus in having another sponsored podcast with our friends at Cisco. This week, we're talking about the ASA 1000V secure virtual firewall product that is a companion for the 1000V virtual switch. And to talk to us this week is Raj Chopra. Hello, Raj.
Hi, Greg.
How are you doing? Now, what's your role inside of Cisco?
I'm responsible, Greg, for the product management of network security products, which includes these different form factors, physical, virtual, and some instances for cloud.
Okay. And we're going to be talking some more about the virtual ASA 1000V in the show, getting down into some nutty details. But to help me make sure the questions sound somewhat intelligent this week is, as always, Ethan Banks. How are you, Ethan?
Hey, Greg, suffering from a little bit of project paralysis where I got so many things going on, I don't think I'm just going to do any of them. I'm just going to kind of sit and suck my thumb and hope for the best.
At least you'll feel better at the end of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then eventually it'll all come good. Sometimes you just ignore things and they get better, don't they?
You know, in state government, that was true. If you ignore it, it goes away because you find out it wasn't funded anyway.
All right, let's push on. So the virtual ASA 1000V firewall, for those of you who don't know, is a firewall that goes inside of the VMware platform. Now, Raj, tell us about how the Nexus 1000V and the ASA functions combine together inside of VMware.
Sure. So what we've done is Nexus 1000V, which is the one sort of substrate, if you will, on the data plane on which a bunch of services are available. The first one out of the gate is the firewall. So what the Nexus 1000V does is it provides not only the data plane functionality, but also intelligent steering, which is through a technology piece that we call vPath. vPath binds together the tagging mechanisms so that you create, just like you create a port group, similarly you have a security profile that gets attached to a certain set of VMs. And this all comes together through a policy that is instantiated from VNMC. So you could have Nexus 1000V intelligently steering traffic to the edge product, which is the ASA 1000V, or to VSG, which is the inter-VM segmentation product that we talked to you about earlier. And it's all coming through a singular sort of policy construct from VNMC.
The Nexus 1000V is the virtual switching platform and it has a centralized controller in the remote supervisor functionality that you have, which is another piece of software. And it sits inside of the vSphere kernel. It's vSphere in 5, isn't it? The virtual ASA is a firewall that goes on top of the 1000V functionality. So you have to have a 1000V to make that go?
That is accurate. So we need Nexus 1000V for data plane functionality as well as providing a consistent set of services on top of this distributed switch from Cisco.
Right. I know that, for example, there are other virtual frameworks out there, a number of other companies, but in particular, let's talk about VMware's products such as vShield, which also offer firewalling functionalities. What would the virtual ASA give us that the other products wouldn't give? What's the key advantages of that?
So, Greg, what we hear from a lot of our customers is that they're looking for consistency both in the expression of the policy as well as the enforcement thereof. So lots and lots of people have the ASA as their physical firewall. It's the most deployed firewall today. And what they're looking for is as they move their workloads either into the virtual environment or in the cloud environment, how can they preserve their security posture, provide secure connectivity, have consistent address spaces, but also the same inspection capabilities that they've had on the physical devices. So for us or our customer base, the premise is how do we bring the same set of capabilities into newer environments to which our applications and workloads are moving. So the distinction from vShield specifically is that vShield is a subset or a small set of features which is provided in a particular form factor on vSphere. And for ASA or ASA 1000V, it is the same set of features customers have used and develop best practices around, which are available in these other form factors.
So when you say best practices there, you're saying that the ASA command line that we all know and the ASDM, does that work the same here?
So yes, the command line ASDM work definitely very, very similarly. By best practices, I meant as a new workload comes up, just like a new application server was coming up, there are constructs that people go through for provisioning these new applications, and those can be expressed consistently, virtual or physical, doesn't really matter. That is one differentiation. The other differentiation, which I think takes us beyond sort of just the vShield part into the more, into deployments that we're seeing right now, is that there is heterogeneity and growing heterogeneity of hypervisors within a data center. And since Nexus 1000V as a distributed switch spans all these different hypervisors, you have a consistent security enforcement footprint regardless of which hypervisor you're going through. So those are sort of two key elements. One is preservation of the feature set and the policy, and the other is something that goes above and beyond just one kind of hypervisor, but across multiple hypervisors.
So what you're saying there, when you say heterogeneous, is you're actually saying that there is, up until now, we've only talked about hypervisors from companies like VMware. That's been the dominant product in the space. But you're saying that your firewall will work for other hypervisors?
Yes, and that will be as we announced back about 2-3 weeks back, the availability of Nexus 1000V on Microsoft Server 2008 R2. As we extend the switch to multiple hypervisors, customers will benefit from the same exact service being available wherever Nexus 1000V is available. So it crosses the hypervisor compartmentalization that you see.
So where vShield only works on VMware, which is perfectly fine if your only hypervisor is VMware, you're saying that the ASA functionality will be available vSphere, Hyper-V, and others in the future potentially, where they're wherever that, because it taps into the functionality of the 1000V.
That is right. And that's where the differentiation comes in, because today we don't have firewalls, one for an IBM server, another one for a Dell server, a third one for a different manufacturer. Firewalls are not going to be beholden to the specific hypervisor that they are running on, but more across the workloads, whether they're running on vSphere or any other different hypervisor. Mm-hmm. I was at VMworld back in August, and I saw these taxi cabs going around with a little present bow tie on them, which said, Oracle runs best on OVM, right? And this is at VMworld, and mm-hmm. we had Citrix also making those claims. So we know that there is going to be more of not only messaging, but also use of hypervisors within a particular, any kind of data center for that matter.
Raj, when Cisco, when you have the 1000V ported over to a different hypervisor, I mean, is the virtual ASA, is that an instantaneous follow-on because of the way it's constructed, or do you actually have to do special work with this product to make it work on the other hypervisor? I mean, it sounds like you're saying wherever it goes, it's going to go, and it's a straightforward thing.
Yes, Ethan, it is straightforward. There is a qualification cycle that we have to go through, obviously, to make sure that all the T's are crossed and I's dotted, but it's a qualification that we have to go through. I can give you examples about what are going to be going through with the Microsoft support for Hyper-V, where instead of sort of tapping into an API from vCenter, we're working with the Microsoft version of the SVCMM to get similar input. But these are more similar than anything else. So there is a qualification process, but it's not redoing the whole thing.
Gotcha.
Why don't we go back a little bit then and then talk about some of the technical fundamentals of how that works. So take us through when a packet comes up off the network and hits mm-hmm. into the hypervisor, it uses mm-hmm. a thing, if I remember my Nexus 1000V show that we did a while back, I think it was AnchorGarg, where there's a thing called VPath, which is the way the Nexus 1000V handles its traffic. So how does it know when and where to direct traffic? So when is it switched and forwarded, and how does it go to the firewall? How does that work?
Let me walk you through the packet steps, or the steps that a packet takes, both for the outbound access and for the inbound access. So for the outbound access, you're going to have VPath, which is, as you rightly pointed out, within Nexus 1000V, that receives a packet that needs to be sent out into outside of the virtualization realm, if you will. Looks up the security policy profile bindings sorry, not policy, but security profile binding, and attaches a VPath tag so that we have enough meta information about the flow that is coming through. That VPath tag contains two specific elements, the service profile ID, because there could be multiple of these service profiles that are attached, and the source VM from which this communication came from. ASA 1000V then takes this tag, creates both a forward and a reverse flow for the packets which are going to follow, which are going to flow on that particular packet flow, applies the policy that has been configured already and have been specified in the security profile, and then ASA 1000V will route the packet out to the outside without the tag. It peels away the tag, uses the tag to apply the policy, create the reverse and forward flow, and then peels that tag away. When the reply packet comes in from the outside without any VPath tag, ASA 1000V will look up the flow table, add the VPath tag, which has, again, the same service profile ID and is there in the flow table, and then VPath takes that packet, removes the tag, forwards it to the particular VM from which that communication was happening.
So when we punch a policy in, how does that affect the data flow? So if I change the, you know, add a firewall rule, how does the Nexus 1000V know to divert the packet into the firewall?
So the packet is going through the firewall on this instance, Greg, because this is an edge deployment. All the packets which are traversing that edge, and that edge can be, I like to call it a trust edge, doesn't have to be edge of the network as in interfacing to the internet, but anything that goes beyond a trust edge. So you could have a bunch of VMs in a VApp configuration, and as packets move in and out, every packet is going through ASA 1000V. So it's not a matter of redirecting packets to the ASA 1000V. If you do have a policy change, ASA 1000V will look up the VPath tag, which tells it two things. One is, what is the service profile? And that service profile is where you're defining whether I need to inspect it for whatever I need to inspect it for, or whether I just let it go and this is fine. Most of the policy, application of the policy happens within ASA 1000V. The other parts are how Nexus 1000V will direct the appropriate traffic with the right VPath tag to the edge firewall. All packets, unlike VSG, all packets, because of the edge deployments, are going through ASA 1000V, and there is not like selective packets or the first few packets that are being steered to that instance.
One of the advantages of having a 1000V in your infrastructure is the portability of the profile that you apply to a switch port. The ASA 1000V, I assume, has that same portability so that when you move a VM into a different cluster, that policy would follow. Is that true with ASA 1000V?
Yes, that is very much true. And maybe I am, in fact, the opposite, Ethan. Of there are some baseline sort of capabilities that we have become so used to now that while I should have mentioned, I did not. Yes, that port profile and the mobility that lends itself to these different workloads is very much part of the ASA 1000V solution. So we'll move the policy will sort of move as the workloads move based on the port profile functionality that we've shared with you earlier.
If I've got the ability to put the profiles to apply firewall policies in the same way that my ASA rule base, today I've got a whole bunch of processes around having firewalls, ASA firewalls in my edge or in my network core, and I have policies with those. If I can put policies into the virtual firewalls, why wouldn't I just have an ASA firewall in the network doing that? What's the advantage of the virtual firewall in this case?
So I think the advantage of the virtual firewall is workflow automation that this provides, where you define your port profiles, you define your service profiles, and as your VMs come up, you have the ability or the agility, I should say, to bring up the right security posture enforcement also at the same time. You don't have to depend on having the enforcement only outside of the virtual realm, as in the physical. There are customers that we have today who use the physical firewalls cut up into security context on a per tenant basis. But then there are other customers who are looking to use the virtual footprint such that the workflow is seamless between bringing up a virtual workload, applying a port profile to a virtual switch, and then applying virtual services like ASA 1000V in one one workflow altogether in a from a provisioning workflow perspective.
Does the virtual ASA then replace the physical ASA? I mean, is the time for physical... I mean, there's a lot of cloud tards out there who would go on and on and say, everything's going to be in software, everything's going to be virtual, there's going to be nothing but Intel CPUs with PCI buses in the whole wide world. Is the physical ASA still around?
Physical ASA is very much around, and it is meant to provide sort of the high throughput, high, low power, low latency environments where you know exactly the kind of perimeter that you want to build for a certain set of workloads. People are leveraging the physical footprints for these firewalls for many, many, many different topologies. The virtual footprint is the one that is new, and the goal here is to address new use cases rather than, per se, do away with the existing use cases, which very much happen in the physical realm. Ultimately, it depends on the choice. We believe that the data center is going to be hybrid for some time to come. And in that hybrid environment, you are going to see a blend of both physical and virtual. The goal here is don't make customers choose which footprint, but provide that consistent set of features so that whatever works best in their topology, they are free to use that and consume that service from Cisco, rather than saying, thou shall use a physical for this and thou shall use a virtual for that. It is more about topology choices to our customers.
Raj, is the feature set completely on parity? I'm real familiar with the ASA as a standalone hardware platform. And so you've got inspections that go all the way up through layer 7 for certain things and all sorts of other functionality. The ASA 1000V, is it exactly the same, or is it... You make it sound like it's you can do everything in the ASA 1000V that you could with a physical ASA.
Yeah, Ethan, pretty much you can do anything that you could on the physical ASA. There are, obviously, you don't have a multi-context like capability because you don't need one. So there are right sizing that has been done on the what sort of capabilities are available. But there is definite consistency. So if you can do certain form of SIP inspection, you can definitely do that SIP inspection with the NAT pieces taken care of and so on and so forth in the virtual form factor also. They are based on similar code bases. The goal, again, like I was saying earlier, is to have a different form factor.
That's another good question, which is what... you said the code bases are similar. What, like ASA is up to the 8.4 family now. Would the ASA 1000V map to?
This is a derivative of the 8.4 train. Okay. What has changed, like I was saying, some of the feature functionality, infrastructure-related feature functionality is slightly different. The other part, obviously, that is different is how it interfaces on the physical ASA with the interface with the device drivers and so on and so forth, versus what you need in the virtual realm, which is splicing back into the Nexus 1000V, leveraging vPath and talking to VNMC for some of the policy creation. Those are the different elements within the ASA 1000V versus, say, an ASA 5585.
So performance. You know, obviously the ASA comes in a range of performances from the 5505, which is, you know, having a nice crawl down the footpath, all the way up to the 5585, which goes to, you know, sort of multi-gigabit performance. What about the virtual ASA? What parameters sets its performance, and how does it scale up to solve those problems?
So I want to break down performance into two different metrics. One is sort of the throughput metric, and the other is capacities. Capacities, we're pretty clear about what those capacity numbers are going to be. Performance as in throughput is a function of the compute cycles that are available to this particular sort of workload that is running. We've done some sort of sizing of these workloads. We've not sort of have the data sheet level things battened down yet, but I would anchor folks on what one single context can do in a physical firewall. You should expect similar capacities and throughput from the ASA 1000V. Not quite 10 gig, not quite 100 megabits either. It's going to be somewhere in between, depending on the compute cycles that we make, that we size this for.
Yeah, because the CPU inside of a VMware server isn't guaranteed. So there's only so many cycles, and they're burned up the CPU cycles are indeterminate because they can be allocated to VMware guests, they can be allocated to VMware itself, and the Nexus 1000V and the ASA firewall sits inside of that whole environment.
Now, my understanding was the hypervisor could and does reserve some amount of CPU for the purpose of packet and frame forwarding. Am I misunderstanding that? I thought there was some sort of a guaranteed cycle.
There is, Ethan, and even beyond that, you can reserve a particular set of cycles for a workload, for an infrastructure workload like this, and we will. So we're sizing it for particular units. The reason I'm keeping away from giving you the absolute throughput number is because we've not yet finalized in what two flavors we're going to make this available. Performance throughput is not a big sort of issue given the fact that you just alluded to, which is that you can always allocate more CPU cycles to get better throughput performance. We're focused right now on getting the infrastructure elements perfectly nailed up, and then there'll be a couple of metrics that we'll put forth. We'll say if you want 500 megabits per second, this would the compute and the memory that needs to be allocated.
Now, since the ASA 1000V rides on top of the Nexus 1000V, do you allocate cycles for the firewall process specifically, or are you actually allocating it to the Nexus, which is then going to hand it off to the virtual firewall?
It's a mix of both, but definitely there is an allocation for the ASA 1000V process that is unique.
Is there a latency number?
So the latency number actually is better than what we've seen right now. We're applying similar tests as we have on the physical side just to have a proper baseline that we are talking apples to apples for our internal numbers. Latencies for these are running pretty well. They are in single digit by any stretch of microseconds, but they are well within the same sort of ballpark that we have on the physical side, which is about 10 to 20 microseconds.
That's pretty low. That doesn't sound horrendous to me.
No.
Good. And once the packet has been classified and it's being appropriately sort of filtered out, the latency metrics are pretty decent.
VMware's got their vShield Edge and their vShield app, and they're quite different products. And how does that compare?
So VSG is specifically meant for that inter-VM segmentation role that we talked to you guys earlier about. So when VMs are interacting amongst themselves, there is, to sort of corral that conversation, got VSG. And ASA 1000V is more at the trust-untrust edge that is providing firewalling, but B, also common address space with NAT. Secure connectivity with IPsec tunnels and so on and so forth. So because the use cases are distinct enough, we feel that these are best served by two specific components. The key part here from a customer perspective is that they are defining their inter-VM as well as trust, untrust, or the edge use cases, both from VNMC. So it's the same policy console from which they're setting the policy. And that's sort of the focus. It is not so much to rhyme with what may be available in the market today. It is more focused on what we've heard from our customers as to what makes the most sort of sense in their environment. There is no commonality that we are unnaturally driving towards, but it's what we've heard from our customers.
Okay, let me ask a question that's a little bit out of left field. A lot of people in the VMware ecosystem make a great deal about everything being integrated into the vCenter management platform. I mean, obviously, VMware's greatest value is that everything's in one window. And yet, in the last 20 years, I've seen the single pane of glass thing sort of fail endlessly. I don't know why we're suddenly expecting it to work this year. The virtual ASA have exposed data to vCenter. Does it integrate? Do the server admins get to see data about that?
Yeah, so the hooks are through VNMC. So VNMC will actually, or it does today, use the APIs back into vCenter to glean out what are the VMs and the entire inventory, which is relevant to create a security policy. And I think that's sort of the notion with vCenter. There is also similar interaction with vShield Manager, for that matter, to get an inventory of different components that need to be expressed in a policy. What we've heard and seen time and time again is the security policy being both defined and in many cases being configured by the security folks, and that is where VNMC comes in. That's where you define your policy. It does talk to vCenter to get information. It doesn't sort of hook back into vCenter where you're starting to define your security policies and vCenter. But there is a back and forth of information between VNMC and vCenter.
Okay, so for people who are listening, VNMC is Cisco's Virtual Network Management Center. It's a virtual appliance that get installed into your hypervisors. That provides centralized device and policy management. I'll include a link in the show notes around that. But it's specifically designed to provide a centralized management for the VSG on the Nexus 1000V. Is that correct?
That is correct. And now, in addition to VSG, it also will be doing it for the ASA 1000V.
Perfect. Okay. Just in case, I hadn't heard of that before, so I had to go off and look that one up. Okay, so let's consider some of the competitive situations. Like, obviously, some people would know that there are other solutions in the same space with virtual firewall products that offer differences. There are two of them. One's HP and one's Juniper. So HP has their SVF, their Secure Virtualization Framework, which came from their Tipping Point group. Are you different from them, or are you the same? I mean, ultimately, there's only a limited number of APIs you can plug into the vKernel or into Hyper-V. Is there a difference between you and Tipping Point?
I think the difference is in the infrastructure, because with the Nexus 1000V, we're not depending on a particular sort of API in the VM world, in the VMware world. That stands for VM Safe API, which, as you rightly pointed out, sort of it gives you a window into what is happening. We've got, with Nexus 1000V as the definitive data plane for services as well as switching, we've got a pretty unfettered view into the packet flow and distinct in terms of both access into the kernel, but also in terms of workflow, because when people think about putting a security enforcement sort of device in their virtual compute environment, they're not just thinking about firewalls or some other security elements, but also how the switching and the regular infrastructure works. So it's about seamless workflow, Greg, I would say, rather than a checkbox of, do you have this capability, do you have that set of capabilities? I mean, this is a footprint for us on which we today do firewalling. We also do secure connectivity. We do consistent sort of IP addressing schemes, inspections that Ethan brought up earlier. So all of those capabilities are available, but in a manner that simplifies your provisioning work, which is sort of not quite the case on the other competitive solutions that you mentioned.
The Secure Virtualization Framework uses a redirection approach, is what you're referring to there. It actually diverts,
yes.
It diverts the flow out of the chassis, out of the server, into a Tipping Point device to be analyzed with, you know, and from their point of view, perhaps that's a good place to do it, right? It's a perfectly viable approach. But you're saying that you're doing it all inside the server chassis, and there's distinct benefits around that.
Exactly, because bringing it out into the physical, you again sort of devolve back into some sorts of encapsulations, and it just seems unnatural for that flow, because now you're trying to bring together something in the physical realm that then needs to be injected back into the virtual, because it is actually the VMs which are interacting with the outside world. Can be done. It is about the right tool for the right problem, not per se a tool for every problem.
I mean, I can see a few advantages to that approach. You'd be offloading certain CPU functions to an external device, but at the same time, you're increasing the latency, because it has to traverse the network. It would have to be in a secure tunnel, whereas doing it on the box means that everything's localized and a lot easier to troubleshoot potentially, or at least to understand or comprehend.
And again, I mean, it doesn't obviate any of the solutions that we have today for it not to be done in the physical. It can be done if a customer chooses to. From our side, that is not the only option. That is one of the options. We provide sort of the same set of capabilities, virtual or physical, as customer chooses to.
Okay. So what about the Juniper? Juniper's got their ALTOR virtual firewall. I don't know if they still call it that. I think they call it something else now. Is that approach different? How is it different?
I think Juniper now calls it virtual gateway. The way that approach is different is you've got ScreenOS-based firewall, then you have a Junos-based firewall, then you have an ALTOR-based firewall, you've got sort of a potpourri of different functionality and use cases and capabilities, not quite sure which one works where. So I think there is this heterogeneity of like which one works where, you never quite know. It's a distinct, completely distinct sort of software from what is the mainline firewall within Juniper today. It essentially is yet another firewall that is brought into the realm. The workflow is through Altor Manager for the physical firewall. That's something completely distinct. It is only VMware specific. There is no sort of infrastructure component that it depends on. So all of the workflows, all of the sort of use cases that we've talked about during the last half an hour, you've got a new firewall with new set of capabilities, none of the tribal knowledge that has been gained. The set of inspections are fairly weak. Early on, firewall, which is distinct from anything that runs on the SSGs or the SRXs.
Yeah, so it's a different way of doing the same thing. What you're saying is they, you know, they have their product, and you're suggesting that the ASA concept of having the same solution all the way across all of your products is going to work better in the long run.
Yeah, and it goes both not just physical and virtual, but also in the virtual realm, it goes across hypervisors, has all of the mobility sort of upside that we talked about earlier with vMotion. And it helps address the new use cases which are coming up with virtualization while preserving all of the feature sets that people are used to with the ASA in their physical environment. So it's about a topology choice rather than dictating that you can only use one or the other. The key elements from us are, as we call, the three Vs, which is interact policy creation through VNMC, leveraging VPath in multi-hypervisor environment, virtualization that we see. Those are the three sort of strategy pillars for us, if you will. Go across hypervisors and leverage VPath capability within Nexus 1000V for intelligent data plane, and then configure through VNMC. We're giving topology choices to our customers for new use cases rather than trying to have them learn yet another firewall.
Well, Raj, let me ask you one more thing while I'm thinking about it. Large ASA shops sometimes use a tool like Cisco Security Manager as an umbrella manager to deal with their policies. Does this plug into that or not really?
This doesn't yet fit into the CSM policy management. And the specific reason for that is we are aligning to the use case that most people are following, where in the virtual realm, you set up your UCS chassis using UCS Manager, define your port profile, and then use those port profiles in the virtual realm using VNMC with Nexus 1000V and VSG and so on and so forth. So we're simplifying the workflow for the guys who are going to be using it in these specific use cases, and we felt that aligning this to VNMC was a much better first step than going to CSM right at the get-go.
But it sounds like CSM is on the roadmap for those shops that really want to silo their security people and keep those policy creations isolated with the tools that they prefer to use.
Yeah, common management platform for physical and virtual, where sort of they become sort of seamless in policy expression, is definitely something that we are working towards.
Raj, I've got a use case sort of a question for you. One of the challenges that we face here is that we're looking at deploying virtualized servers that are internet facing. They're in a DMZ. And we've made the decision at this point to have a virtualized infrastructure that is physically separate, that is going to host anything that's internet-facing in a DMZ. Now, if I deploy an ASA 1000V, can I leverage my main virtualization clusters, if you will, and still be confident that I've got the security I need? How does this factor in with maybe needing some VPN services, NAT?
Great question, Ethan. So I think we've got a spectrum of customers on who are thinking sort of similar things. In their own data centers, they like to preserve the physical sort of segmentation, the one that you alluded to, having workloads in the DMZ. As they do move some of the workloads in the cloud, what they're looking for is, how do I form a secure connectivity from my data center and extend that security posture out into the cloud? So they're looking for secure connectivity into their workloads that are running in the cloud. The other part that they're also looking for is not for a lot of RPC-based traffic or a lot of interactive traffic, but for other management or control plane-like traffic that applications may have between amongst themselves, they want a common address space. They don't want to have to readdress their infrastructure just because they're throwing some workloads up in the cloud. So they're looking for common address spacing, how applications get IP addresses from the DHCP infrastructure. So they're looking for a secure connection back into their workloads that are running in the cloud on their own physical data center. They are preserving the posture that they've maintained for several years. So it is extending the security that they're comfortable with in their own data centers as they move their workloads to the cloud. They want to extend that security posture in the cloud.
The important thing to think about here is that as you add virtual machines to, like, for a lot of customers, you bring in a vSphere server, you put it in, and then you can start instantiating a virtual firewall in each vSphere instance, right? And that means that every time you add a server to the DMZ, you can add another firewall. You don't actually have to keep adding new firewalls or worry about that stepping in price. Like, as you buy a bigger firewall, you have to throw your old one out, and that capital investment isn't linear. So for cloud, for private cloud, you're actually getting like a scale-up performance of the virtual ASA, which is a lot more linear and a lot more modular. You can add firewall capacity in just little pieces as you go, yeah?
Yes. So I think modular would be the right sort of characteristic for this, Greg. As you're bringing up these workloads, these are going to, you bring in a, let's call it a virtual application of some sort, or a workload that is running within a VM, or a bunch of VMs that are interacting. You put them in a trust wrapper, call it a VApp, and these are fronted by a particular instance of ASA 1000V. Another instance comes up, you simply just bring up another instance of ASA 1000V. Definitely more modular and elastic in the sense that you could have several of these on the, shrink these down back to a smaller size or a smaller number of instances as need be.
And from that point of view, you're also scaling up your performance as well. Not only are you scaling up your delivery, you're also scaling up your performance, but because you have a central management console, you're staying within your operational profile.
That is very true. The operational profile is what we've seen be the most pronounced sort of requirement from a lot of customers, because I think the real value that is people are deriving from virtualization at a larger scale is coming through automation. So anything that sort of slows things down in that automation process is cause for alarm. It is definitely the workflow part that you mentioned that is the big winner, rather than sort of just compacting a bunch of VMs onto a server. The seamlessness, the automated workflow, that is the real economic benefit that people are deriving.
That's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to Packet Pushers. We should be back again in a week or so. Make sure you come back. I'd like to thank Raj for coming on the show and telling us all about the virtual ASA. What are you going to be doing in the next week or two on the virtual ASA, Raj?
We're getting ready to have a formal launch. I think October 18th is when a lot of this information goes out to the broader set of customers. We also have, as 18th, I think, is the internal sort of milestone for our on our end, and 25th of October is the external event at which we are going to be talking about not just ASA 1000V, but a broad set of capabilities within the data center that Cisco has to talk about.
Hopefully you can send me over a bunch of links, which the listeners can find in the show notes around the virtual ASA product and how they can get more information on it.
I certainly will.
Okay. And Ethan, thanks again for turning up for business.
Yeah, this is an interesting show. We're building up a VMware lab here, and this is going to definitely make my list of the things that I want to test in that environment. I want to see just how similar it is to the actual ASA and get some policies written and try them out.
That sounds awesome. Okay, and I'm Greg Farrow. You can find me at etherealmind.com or on the Twitter as at etherealmind. As always, you can leave your feedback about today's show at our website at http://packetpushers.net or email us at packetpushers@gmail.com. And remember that, as always, too much networking would never be enough.